Hi, you're listening to my favourite Elliot Smith song. In this podcast, we try, in our own very small way, to keep Elliot Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. So hi, and thank you for joining us for this episode, released on a special day, what would have been Elliot Smith's 51st birthday. Now, we've been saving this interview to put out today because our guest, Steve Holmes, who plays in the band American Football, has quite a strong personal connection to the song he picked. He's going to talk us through one of Elliot's rare and unreleased tracks because he was actually there at one of the very few times it was ever played live. So we'll go into that interview very, very soon, but I just wanted to give Steve a bit of an intro for those of you who don't know him or his band. Steve plays guitar in the band American Football. The group formed in Illinois in 1997 and 2 years later released their first album. As they decided to go their separate ways back in 2000, it took American Football until 2016 to release their second album, and they're now back together playing again, releasing their most recent record last year. Steve is a huge Elliot Smith fan and saw him play live a few times, including, of course, when he saw this song being played. So it was great to get the chance to speak to him and chat through one of the hidden gems in Elliot's back catalogue. So here he is, here's Steve Holmes.
Hello, this is Steve Holmes. I play guitar in a band called American Football. And my favorite Elliot Smith song is called Unlucky Charm. This is an interesting song. It's an unreleased song that, as far as I know, there's only two known performances of it, one from 1997 and one from 2002. In Chicago, and I was actually at that Chicago show. It's sort of an infamous show for people who are fans of Elliot. This is it was a Northwestern University kind of student-only show, and I was not a student there, but my wife and I at the time just showed up and figured we could get some kids to buy us tickets, and we didn't even know Elliot was playing. It was kind of funny. It was, as far as we knew, it was a Wilco show. When we showed up, we found out Elliot Smith is opening, and we were ecstatic because we love Elliot. We'd only seen him twice before that. We saw him, I think it was on the EXO tour and on the Figure Eight tour, and both times he had a live band. So we'd never seen him solo acoustic. So we were really ecstatic going into the show that we were going to see one of our favorite of all time people. And it was a weird show. So he came out and, well, first of all, it was not sold out. So the Riviera is like a 2,500 cap theater, and the whole balcony was closed. And I think the floor, which probably holds, you know, 1,500 maybe, was, it felt like it was like half full. It was not anywhere near sold out. And it seemed like for the students there, maybe there were some of them were Wilco fans, but more of just felt like a social event. So they were talking the entire Elliot performance and like not paying attention at all. Which didn't help. And Elliot came out. I think one of the first things he said introducing himself was that he slept funny on the plane and that his two of his fingers on his left hand were dead, quote unquote, which is his fretting hand, which makes it really hard to play guitar. And so he, I want to say like at the time, it felt like he, you know, played like three songs, but I think I've gone back and listened to it since, and I think he aborted like half the songs of the set. But he played a lot of new songs, including this one and several songs that would wind up on From a Basement on the Hill. So there was a lot of songs that I didn't even know at the time. And the ones he aborted were mostly songs that people did know. So it felt really like a debacle. Like I'd never seen someone of his caliber just completely shit the bed like that. It was really painful to watch. And he was out of it. He seemed like, you know, I don't know him. I've never met him personally. I don't know if he was on drugs or what was happening, but it was a really a painful performance as a fan to sit through. And clearly there were some hardcore Elliot fans there up front kind of encouraging him and really, you know, hoping that he could push through, but it was rough to watch. But anyway, the one highlight was this song, Unlucky Charm, which I remember it stuck in my head. There was a few lines that really blew me away, even in real time, hearing it for the first time. Always
What are those lines?
There's one right at the beginning. It's the when the awful truth's been told, matter of fact, and I can't take it back, and I wouldn't want to, or at least that's what I say. And that line, that last part, or at least that's what I say, I remember just being like, oh, that's such a great line. Because I think we've all been there where you say something to someone that you don't mean, or maybe you do mean, and it really cuts them, and you feel terrible about it. But maybe it's something that needed to be said in that part that I wouldn't want to. I think like a good songwriter could write that first part of the line, and then there's like twists and turns in it, right? It's like, I can't take it back. Great line. And I wouldn't want to, even better. And then that third layer, or at least that's what I say, brilliant. And I think that's a thing that's unique to Elliot, where there's like twists and turns, where the meaning of something kind of pivots as he goes.
Do you think by saying, or at least that's what I say, he's saying that he's just telling himself that story?
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, you're not sure what he means then, right? He's like taking it back. Like he's got this front externally in this fight or whatever's happening with this person. But then even to himself, he's like, I said, I don't want to take it back, but I wish I could. I shouldn't have said that.
He doesn't want to interrogate that feeling.
Yeah. So I actually remember that line. And then the line, just unlucky charm itself, just seemed like such an Elliot Smith thing to say. And that stuck with me too. And I remember actually searching for that on the internet, probably around the time that he passed. And I don't remember how long it took me to find it, but I eventually stumbled on the 1997 live show recording and realizing, oh my God, that's that song. And then probably even years after that, I finally went and downloaded the 2002 show and listened to the whole thing and heard that version as well. But one of the things that I really love about this song that I think is unique to Elliot, and I think a lot of hardcore fans really love his unreleased material. And I think, like, to me, Elliot is one of the greatest. Like, I'll put him up there with Bob Dylan. I think he's one of the all-time greats as a songwriter. And I think that songs like this and songs on From a Basin on a Hill and from the New Moon stuff and even stuff that hasn't come out yet as well, like this one doesn't even have a proper recording that we know of, but it's a brilliant song. It's such a good song. This song is probably better than most bands' best song, and he never released it. It blows my mind.
Is he the unlucky charm in this, do you think? Is that what you take?
Well, I think that's part of his genius. So like if you look at the body of the song, it's an undefined relationship. It could be friends, it could be like a lover's or a family member, it could be him talking to himself, it could be someone else talking to him. So I think there's a lot of ways to interpret it. And I think that kind of vagueness and undefined elements of it is what allows people to kind of insert themselves into it and apply it to different situations in their own lives. And I think that's why with this song and a lot of his songs, that's why it's so meaningful, because people can kind of interpret it how they want. Like for me, one of the things that I love about it, which is also kind of a big thing in other songs of his, is it moves from kind of like poetic metaphorical language at the beginning. He starts talking about, you know, my flower would not unfold, always waiting for some sunnier day, quiet and patient, but afraid and hidden away. Beautiful. And then it kind of pivots to like realistic, really plain spoken language of this kind of call and response back and forth of a relationship. And then it comes back to a metaphor at the end when he talks about a beautiful collapsing star, which to me, I mean, that line is also just genius. Like, I think everybody knows someone who has amazing talent and potential, but they're their own worst enemy. And I think that metaphor, the collapsing star, what he means is like, literally, that's a star that collapses under its own weight, right? The its own gravity destroys it and it disappears into a black hole. And I can't help but apply that to Elliot himself, right? Like, that's like literally what happened. And obviously, I know that's not what he meant when he wrote it. But it's there. And I think he probably, you know, initially that was probably about someone, he had a friend very like himself, someone who was super talented and wasn't realizing their potential. And this almost feels like him calling that person out. And it's somewhat ironic that it could very easily apply to himself.
How different was that Northwestern University show from the other times that you'd seen him?
Well, the first two times we saw him, I think those were both at the Metro, which is a much smaller club, like 1,100 cap, mostly standing. And the thing I remember most from like the EXO tour, it was fast. I feel like they played less than an hour. It was like maybe like a 45-minute set. And I don't even think there was an encore. And I remember being kind of disappointed, like, well, that's it. And I was hoping he would come back and do like an acoustic set or something. But they were really tight. Like, I think in both those shows, he seemed very guarded. Like, I don't remember him talking to the audience much. It seemed like he was just in full-on tour mode. And they were incredibly tight. The band was phenomenal. They played everything like note perfect. His voice was great. They were just like, it almost felt though like they were here doing a job. Like, it's weird. Elliot, like, I think most people who love Elliot, like, it's nothing that I'm going to put on in the house. Like, I'm not going to jam out Elliot at a party or doing the dishes or family dance party, anything like that. It's music that you listen to mostly with headphones. Like, for me, like, laying in bed in the dark or something like that. It's a very personal music that I think people connect to. And so executing it as like the full-on rock band never felt to me like the right way to execute these songs, even though they were incredibly good at it. It just didn't come across the same way. So for that 2002 show, I was so excited to finally see him play acoustic. And then obviously it wound up being a bit of a debacle. But I also think like that's not like him aborting songs midway through. That's a thing he did his entire career. I don't think that necessarily is unusual, and I don't think he cared about that. I think if he wasn't playing it right or wasn't feeling it, like people would call out songs and he would start playing it and go, "Eh, I don't want to play that one."
As you've been saying throughout, this song is a very rare song, very few recordings of it known to exist, and no proper studio ones. Do you like sort of delving deep into the Elliot Smith archives and finding the rarer tracks?
Yeah, in fact, I think I listen to those more than I hardly listen to the studio albums anymore. I think after Elliot died, I remember wanting more, and I, you know, via Sweet Adeline or whatever, kind of searching out those unreleased songs even before From a Basement on the Hill came out and way before New Moon. And I got, you know, really terrible internet downloads of a lot of the unreleased material, a lot of stuff that still hasn't come out. And I remember making at the time, I was traveling a lot for work and I had a mix CD of probably 20 or 30 unreleased Elliot songs. And I would just, every time I had like an hour drive from the airport to my office at that time, and I would listen to that over and over again, probably literally for years. Like, that was the one CD I brought with me going on these business trips, and I would listen to it endlessly. And this song was on that mix as well. And that's another thing that's interesting about this song that I've noticed. There's like the two performances are 5 years apart. And I think the 97 version is probably the essential version of this, but he actually was tweaking the lyrics. Like, there's modest tweaks between those two versions. So you can tell, even though he only played it twice ever that we know of, he was still changing the lyrics and making it better. Like in the 2002 version, there's like two or three clunky lines from the first version that he fixed. I'm trying to find an example of it. So in the original version, he says, so go start over. It's been a time since you've had to do. And he kind of mumbles it. It's clearly a line he didn't finish. And then in the later version, he says, so go on and do it with what you really know. And then later he says, what do you want to do from now? And he changes that later to what are you going to do about it? Like little things. And then the last one is, stop taking everything back. It confronts you just lying down. Changes to stop taking every death just lying down. Very different line. And to me, like that, and he did that with a lot of songs. I think there's a lot of songs that have multiple versions, or he even takes lyrics from one song and repurposes them for a different song. And I think to me, that's part of what I love about it, is that he was always writing and rewriting and tweaking. Not even just the lyrics, like in the two versions, like he changes the tempo and the strumming pattern. And in fact, the 2002 version, he ends it by saying, and it fades out like that. So you can tell, even though he hadn't recorded it, he meant to. Like in his mind, he knew what this song was, or what it was going to be.
American Football you were kind of setting out in like 97, around the time when Elliot's solo career was, you know, he was becoming bigger and bigger as a solo artist at that point. How much of an inspiration was he when you were kind of forming that band and the band was getting together?
Yeah, I would say huge. So actually, I discovered Elliot, I think it was in 1996. This is in like the fledgling days of the internet. I was a big Nick Drake fan. And somehow I connected with somebody, I forget where, but somewhere in like somewhere in a Scandinavian country, someone who had an Elliot's or a Nick Drake fan site. And we exchanged emails and sent each other tapes. Like, what else do you listen to that sounds like Nick Drake? And he sent me the self-titled Elliot Smith record, which had probably just come out. And that was how I first heard of Elliot. Spent a lot of time listening to that in my bedroom. I shared that with Mike, who is the other guy, the other guitar player in American Football. We were roommates all through college, and that was our discovery of Elliot. And I think, you know, if you put it in context, Elliot was, I think, super important to like where independent music was going. So it was still very much in like the loud punk, post-hardcore, whatever. You know, we were coming out of being big into like all the Discord bands and bands like, you know, Louisville bands like Rodan and Slint and that type of loud music that had a lot of dynamics to it, but they weren't quiet bands. And Elliot was one of the first artists that just went the other way, kind of opposite of what the culture of independent music was at the time, and said, all right, I'm just going to make these little bedroom pop songs. And Elliot, I think, was important. I think his, when he blew up with the Good Will Hunting thing, pushing that sort of one man band, bedroom folk pop into the mainstream, that, you know, if it wasn't for Elliot, I don't think bands like The Shins or Bon Iver even, or Bright Eyes, any of those bands would have been as big crossover successes as they were. He kind of like led the way for that. And even like a Phoebe Bridgers, who you talked to, like she's hugely indebted to Elliot. But for us at the time, like when we were starting American Football, which is right around that same time, I don't think like musically we were going for something different. There's other bands that were probably more of a direct influence. But I do think the thing that I take most from Elliot is his, like his chord changes, his, you know, understanding of melody and song structure, and the thing that I think most is just like taste. Like he has a really subtle virtuosity. Like it's never showy, it's never over the top, and it sounds easy, but it's not. And we always try to do something similar, where it's interesting and it's cool and it doesn't sound complicated, or it doesn't sound maybe as complicated as it is if you actually try to figure it out.
I read an interview, I think it was with GQ, that you did, where you're talking about how Either Or, the album, changed music. Is that what you're talking about when you talk about how Elliott Smith, you know, led to the Shins, Bon Iver, and those kind of artists?
Yeah, I think so. I think he, you know, I mean, he wasn't as sick, you know, a weird parallel would be like Nirvana. Like Nirvana kind of exploded the underground punk rock scene into the mainstream, and on a much lesser scale, I think Elliott was kind of the same figurehead for, you know, one man band, you know, four track projects, and people kind of looking back to classic 60s pop and trying to do that in a modern context. And I do think he was the best at it. Like I think if people, everyone compares him to the Beatles. It's an apt comparison. I think he got annoyed by that, but he really is. He's like a punk rock one man band version of the Beatles. And it's blasphemous to say, like, I love the Beatles as much as anyone. Like, we actually had like a Beatles tribute band. It was our wedding band. So, you know, I can say this. I think Elliott's better than the Beatles. Like, I think the Beatles now, most of their lyrics are corny and they don't really stand up. But Elliott's lyrics are phenomenal. And I think his melodies are just as good. Obviously, his production in general wasn't near the level of the Beatles. But as a songwriter, I think his songs are better.
So thank you very much to Steve for sharing those great stories with us. The recording we used here was the live version from 1997, as it's the best quality I could find. But if you want to hear the recording from the show Steve was at, there's a link to it in the show notes of this episode. There's also a very good Reddit feed, if they call them feeds on Reddit, about Unlucky Charm that I've linked to in the episode notes as well. So that's pretty much it for this episode. Once again, a very happy birthday to Elliott Smith, who would have been 51 today, August the 6th, 2020. Our thanks to Steve Holmes for being our guest. Thanks to Elizabeth Woodstanley for producing this show with me. And of course, thank you for listening to it. We're going to take a quick summer break on the podcast, and we'll be back again with a new episode in September. To play us out, here is Lainey from Argentina telling us what her favourite Elliott Smith song is. Thanks for listening.
Hi, my name is Lenny. I'm from Buenos Aires, Argentina, and I'm sending this audio to talk about my favorite Elliott Smith song. The one I always come back to, you know, no matter no matter in which stage of my life I am or whatever I'm, I always find it really comforting, and it makes me feel less alone every time I hear it. And that's the song is 2:45 a.m. Well, of course, as all Elliott Smith songs, the lyrics are just beautiful and relatable, and it feels like a conversation with him. And I know most lyrics, I mean, at least in my opinion, they'll feel kind of this way, you know, like a conversation, like he's telling you something, something he's feeling or he's thinking or something that happened to him. But this song in particular, I have always felt that he was talking to me and, you know, just telling me, oh, you know, I've been through this and this, and I know you've been through something similar as well, and I just want to let you know that you're not alone, and that I see you, and that I understand what you're going through. And that's the most amazing thing that art can do.